You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, this is Tim McMaster taking you around the American League East for MLB.com Extras, a special All-Star edition as our writers were able to catch up with former All-Stars from all the clubs. Let's talk about the New York Yankees and Brian Hoke, who caught up with David Cone.
With former All-Star David Cone. And David, when you think about the All-Star game and your experiences there, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
I think the first thing that comes to my mind is when you first walk into the clubhouse and you're around the best players in the game and how overwhelming that can be. For me, it was seeing Cal Ripken and Kirby Puckett and guys like that. And you can't believe that you're in the same room with them, especially the first experience, the first All-Star game you make. It can be really overwhelming. And you just, it's an electric feeling that you're part of an elite group, and you get to go out on the field and watch batting practice and hang out with guys that are for the most part strangers and your adversaries, but for one day you all can kind of let your guard down and get to know each other a little bit, and it really is a unique situation.
You were able to represent both the NL and the AL. In your mind, what was the difference between the two sides? Was there one?
There used to be a big one. Even back to the 80s, the first All-Star game I made in 1988, there still was a definite pride factor between the National League and the American League. And the National League, it had a long history of dominance. Back to Pete Rose, some of his antics, knocking over Ray Fosse at home plate and a home plate collision. So there was a real pride factor, and there were speeches given before the game by representatives from the league just about that issue, about, hey, we need to continue to prove that the National League's better than the American League.
Now, obviously, you're not in the clubhouses now, but do you feel like that's still there, or has that kind of faded away?
I think it's faded away to a certain degree, although I'm sure there's still a little bit of a pride factor going on. There's still a little bit of competitiveness of American and National League styles of play, DH, no DH, who has the tougher league, where's it tougher to pitch or hit. So I'm sure there's still a little bit of that going on, but nowhere near the level it was back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
If you think back to the first one in 1988 that you went to in Cincinnati, was there a guy you were really looking forward to meeting or a conversation you were able to have that really sticks out?
For me, there was a little bit of satisfaction in that. I was traded from the Royals to the Mets, and almost a little over a year later, I'd made the All-Star team, so I couldn't wait to go shake George Brett's hand and anybody on the Royals. And it was a little bit of a peacock effect where you stick your chest out and you're like, hey, shouldn't have traded me, and there's always that pride part. But I was a big George Brett fan growing up. I got a chance to be his teammate, and I just kind of wanted to shake his hand and see what he had to say.
The All-Star games I've been to, there's a lot of autograph swapping that goes around, collectibles, souvenirs. Was there anything that you still have from your All-Star games or brought home?
Yeah, every year there's always a gift. From that 88 game, they gave us a chair. It was sort of like a director's chair. Mm-hmm. And it was, it had the insignia on it. So it's something that goes good in your office somewhere, in a basement, in a man cave somewhere. So I just remember that director's chair and going, wow, okay, I get to keep this.
But there were no autographs that you wanted to seek out? Were you that kind of guy?
I wasn't a huge autograph collector, but certainly I got a few along the way of my favorites. In 1988, there were three of us that used to be Royals that made that team. Mark Gubazow was a former roommate of mine. He made the team as a Royal. And Danny Jackson was a former teammate of mine, a lefty pitcher with Cincinnati, former Royal, and he made that team. And then I made the team as a Met. So we all three got together and signed some stuff and took a picture together. And former Royals, and there's always, whenever you get traded, there's always that, hey, I'll show you, and you shouldn't have traded me.
What about the 2 years that you went with the Yankees? Joe Torre, you were defending world champions.
Yes.
Joe Torre's your manager. You've got a lot of your teammates there. What was it like? Did you guys kind of feel like you ran the show those years for the AL?
It felt really good because, in 97, we were coming off of the 96 World Series, and there was a lot of pride. Joe Torre was the manager, so you certainly felt a little different level of excitement because you were representing, as a Yankee and as the defending world champs.
And then having all your teammates there, were you guys kind of the leaders in the clubhouse, so to speak?
There's definitely a comfort level when you have you know, 3, 4, 5 different teammates that are all there together. Definitely, you get together and take a picture separately from the team, you know, the Yankee All-Stars. It feels good, without a doubt. And there's safety in numbers. Yeah. So you feel like, hey, my comrades are with me.
When you look at the All-Star game the way it is now, the changes they've made, obviously home field advantage, it counts. What do you think when you look at that? Does it add to it? Does it take away from it? What's your opinion?
I think that originally that was a concession to the networks, to Fox, because they really wanted to spruce up the All-Star game and make it meaningful, try to create more interest. So I think it was a reflection of more of a cooperative effort between the Players Association and Major League Baseball and, of course, the broadcast partners. That kind of spearheaded, less acrimony and more cooperative efforts between the two. And that's probably why we've had labor peace for so long, is because there's been more of a willingness to do those sorts of things, even though there was some... there was some apprehension on the player's side as to, hey, wait a minute, this is home field advantage in the postseason. Is this really the right thing to do? But, we conceded at that particular time because we wanted to be more of a good partner and create a good atmosphere between, labor and management.
I'm with Lance Carter, former Tampa Bay Devil Ray, who made the... American League All-Star team in 2003. Lance, what do you remember? I mean, the Rays were not having, their Devil Rays back then, excuse me, were not having the best season, but here it is, All-Star time, and you got picked for the All-Stars. What was that like initially?
I guess like anybody, it was very surprising. I didn't think I was having a bad year for the amount of wins and what we were doing. I thought I was doing a pretty good job out of the bullpen, but Rocco Baldelli and Aubrey Huff were having very good years. And I got called into Lou Piniella's office, and honestly, I thought he was going to move me to set up because I had a bad 2 weeks, or I might have been being sent down. And he told me I'd made the All-Star team, and I asked him if he was serious. And he said yes, and congratulations. And to be honest with you, it was very gratifying. Because I put in a lot of hard work to come back with my 2 Tommy Johns and to get that opportunity for, Mike Socha and people around baseball to acknowledge, what I was able to do and was doing for the team there in Tampa. It was very gratifying and a highlight of my career.
Where was the game that year?
It was in Chicago at the White Sox ballpark. I don't remember what it's called now. The stadium has changed names so many times.
It was Comiskey back then, I'm sure.
No, it was whatever, U.S. Cellular, I think is what it's called. Yeah. So the U.S. Cellular Field. So we went to Chicago, and my brother and my sister and her family and my parents. And married at the time with my ex-wife, and she went. It was a great opportunity to be around great players. And players that you compete against every day, and sitting in the bullpen with CC Sabathia and Barry Zito, and flying from Seattle there with Brett Boone and Edgar Martinez and Ichiro, and with Luke Piniella. It was pretty surreal.
So that's where the Devil Rays were before the break.
Yes, we were in Seattle.
So what were some of the festivities like? Was that a lot of fun to go through?
Yeah, I mean, the home run derby, that's the practice, the BP the day before, and, that Maxi Matsui and Ichiro and seeing the number of media from Japan, and then there were some get-togethers after, and by the time the home run derby was over, I was so tired, I went back and went to sleep, and then it's all a whirlwind because it all goes real fast. You have all kinds of stuff. You got a sign in the back, and Roy Halladay was my locker mate next to me, and turns out to be one of the great pitchers of his era. So it's one of those moments that you look back on, and I wish I had an opportunity to pitch in a game. It's the first year that it counted for American League at home and National League with that home field advantage. And hey, Blaylock hit the home run off of Eric Gagne, who hadn't blown a save in forever. for the American League to win the ball game was pretty amazing.
Yeah, so what was your status going into the game in order? And you say you did not get used, but, I mean, what condition would you have been used in?
Talking to social before the game, I would have been multiple inning where he needed. There was a bunch of guys that didn't pitch. Didn't throw. John Smoltz didn't throw. I mean, I wasn't the only one. But to try to win the ball game to secure home field advantage, and I don't remember if the Angels, I think they were in the World Series that year, to be honest with you. He wants home field advantage, so you can't blame him. You got to have somebody to go a pitch because it wasn't going to end in a tie.
So I mean, it wasn't like, it probably would have felt worse not being in the game had it been kind of a meaningless game, but this probably felt like it meant something, too.
Yeah. Well, and it meant something. It was the first year they did that, and you can't blame, either Skipper at the time to try to win to get home field advantage because they expected their team to be in the World Series. And, I was very honored to be there, and it's an exhibition game. I wish it would have been one of those things where I would have gotten an opportunity to pitch. I was there, and it's something that I can always carry with me and be around those guys and watch a great game.
Thanks, Lance. And tell us a little bit about what you're doing these days.
I'm working for the Red Sox organization. I'm the pitching coach for the Lowell Spinners and the Short Seating Club of the New York Penn League. And, I really enjoy doing it. I enjoy being able to pass along my experiences and whatever knowledge I have to young players to try to help them reach their ultimate destination, their dream, which is to play in the big leagues.
Hello, everybody. My name is Gregor Chisholm, and welcome to this week's edition of the MLB.com Extras Blue Jays podcast. And we wanted to do something a little bit different for you this week. With the All-Star Game coming up in San Diego, we wanted to talk to a former player about his experience at the All-Star Game, and who better to go to than former Blue Jays slugger Carlos Delgado. Delgado made the All-Star team for the first time in 2000. Then he also went back in 2003 as a starter. He was kind enough to sit down with us for a few minutes and talk about the experiences and what he remembers at that time. Here's the interview with Carlos Delgado.
Walk down memory lane to 2000. What do you remember about how you found out about being put on the All-Star team and what that meant to you at that time?
I'll tell you what, it was pretty special because, it's a great recognition. And I had some pretty decent years before that, but I never got the votes. And I don't know if whether because I was in Canada with, less people voting, obviously less attendance than some of the bigger markets, but it seemed like I never, never really had a chance. And when I got that call, it was pretty special having the opportunity to go to an actual All-Star game, and see some of the players that you kind of idolized when you were younger. You walk in that clubhouse, and he's like, wow, these guys, this is a pretty cool clubhouse. So it's an experience that I will always remember. I think we flew from Montreal to Atlanta. I know my mom and dad flew up from Puerto Rico, and it was great. And I always remember about that game. I don't know if I'm jumping to the next question, but I'm trying to.
That's fine.
I remember because I wasn't starting, yeah. So I didn't know what to do because we're creatures of habits. We had this routine, and I was kind of like pacing the dugout because I didn't know when I was coming in. I was kind of like a little nervous. Say, when do I get in? When do I get in? What do I do? When do I stretch? I had no idea what the hell was going on. I enjoyed it. So finally came in and I got an at bat and I hit a double, and it was cool, and all the festivities around it, the day before and the media press conference and all the autographs and the home run derby. I thought it was pretty cool.
What was it like walking into the clubhouse around that time when you had so many like greats around you? I mean, normally they're your opposition and it's kind of a different environment during those few days.
Like I said, it was pretty cool because you get like the best of the best. But it's funny when you play against them, they're good. But you almost don't want to give them that much credit because you want to beat them. But when you walk in that clubhouse and they're going to be your teammates, and you start kind of realizing, and everybody's kind of calling out stats, and then you put in perspective, say, damn, this guy's really, really good, and that guy's really, really good, and this guy's got an impressive career, and the other guy, next thing you know, it's like everybody's an all-star, and that's a good reason. So it was cool. It was really cool.
Was it different for you in 2003 when you went back again? Was it a different feeling? Would you have been there, done that, or is it the same kind of?
I was still very excited. Obviously, I had 1 year experience, which is not a whole lot, but it was better. But the thing is, like, in 2003, I was a starter.
Yeah.
So that kind of made it easier just because I knew what was going on. I knew when I was going to do my little routine, and I knew when I was going to go to first base or to hit. But still, it's a fabulous experience. Because then, once again, you're in that clubhouse with, you know, with superstars. And it's kind of pretty cool. You know, it's the only game in town. There's no other game on the West Coast or anywhere else. It's just that game, that day. It's special.
You kind of touched on this, but there was that stereotype for a very long period of time that playing in Canada, you don't get as much attention, exposure.
Yeah.
The fact that you were voted in 2003, did that take on a special significance for you?
It was pretty special because it kind of validated your numbers and your career. Getting that recognition that at times we feel like we get the short end of the stick when you're playing up here, and it is kind of nice now these days that, you know, with Batista having the kind of year that he has had in the last few years, and Donaldson winning the MVP, and the Jays are making it the playoffs, kind of like redirecting the eyes again back to Toronto. And I guess another thing that might help, you know, with the Raptors having a fantastic playoff run, it will make it better to get more attention to back to Toronto.
Now, when the All-Star game, there's home field advantage on the line. There's some people who really like it. There's some people who don't. What's your stance on the way they've changed things?
You know, I think it's a little unfair. I know they try to make it a little bit more competitive, so the players can really go out and play it out. But there's so many things that you can't control, and it's hard to judge who's going to get home field advantage in the playoff, which is huge, based on one game of guys that don't usually play together, not necessarily having the best players available. Because if you get the best pitcher in the league happy to pitch on that Sunday, he's not going to pitch on that Tuesday at the All-Star game. So that's kind of unfair for the team that happens. I would kind of like to see the team with the best record should get the home field advantage. But, you know, that's my opinion, and those are my reasons. I also want to also understand that, you know, for TV reasons and audience, they want to put a good product on the field on the All-Star game. They should have a better way to create an incentive for the players to play it out.
You're still an active part of this organization. You're around in spring training. You come back to Toronto. What's it meant to you to continue to be involved?
Well, it's always nice to stay in touch. I get the opportunity to travel to the minor leagues too, to work with the guys, and, you know, we talk and we try to, you know, I try to help them out. It's always nice. It's different just because, you know, for the longest time you're always thinking it's player, 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 player. Now you're on the other side, on the dark side now, but having the opportunity to stick around, I'm very grateful to Toronto for the opportunity they gave me to establish myself as a big leaguer, and having the opportunity to help out in their minor leagues and come out to Toronto and enjoy my time and do some of these events is phenomenal.
Is that something you always thought you wanted to do post playing career, or to get involved in the coaching side?
Not really. You know, for a while I didn't really want to do anything. I just kind of want to stay home and kind of chill and be with my kids, and I still do. You know, I'm not quite ready for a full-time job. My kids are still little, and I like to have that flexibility of being home and, you know, hanging out with them and go to the soccer practice and the dance recital and to the little showcase of school. So that's always, I cherish that. I guess at some point they're going to get tired of me, and then I'll do something else.
Last one for you, and then I'll let you go. You got a taste of what it was like here in the early 90s, and you kind of saw years after that the fan base, the support go down a little bit during some tough years. When you come back here and see the crowds that the Jays have been getting and the environment around here. Does it kind of bring you back to some of those memories of what Toronto baseball was like before?
Definitely. I mean, I wasn't a part of the 92, 93, yeah. Glory Day, even though I was a September call-up. But seeing this and, like, all the stuff in social media and, like, just walking on the streets the last couple of days and last year, everybody's wearing a Blue Jays hat and a blue T-shirt. I think it's phenomenal. I mean, on Friday, I was driving in from the airport. Traffic was so bad. People walking on the streets. I'm like, you're going to get 45,000 people at the Rogers Center. You're going to get 20,000 people at the ACC. How are they going to get into the city? And, you know, and then you go sell out the last night, and then today is a sold out. I think it's phenomenal. As a player, you appreciate it a lot more. I mean, you take the field. It's nicer to hear 45,000 people than to hear 15, like some days that I play here. So it's nice. It's like I said earlier, it's kind of cool to see baseball being trendy again in the city.
Great. Thanks a lot,
you
guys.
Bet.
I really appreciate it, man.
Take care, Greg.
Thank you.
This is Brittany Giroli here with Orioles legend and broadcaster Jim Palmer. Jim, you were involved in a lot of All-Star games. Do you have a favorite memory or a favorite year that you were involved?
Well, I think it's probably my first one. It was 1970. They were playing in Cincinnati, and I woke up that morning and I looked at the starting lineup. I never had a migraine headache, but when I saw Willie Mays leading off and Rose hitting second and bench and Aaron, I think Dick Allen hit seventh. But I had a pretty good lineup and was pitching against Tom Seaver. So went to the luncheon that day, and I had a light tan suit on with kind of a light orange shirt on with a flower tie. And one of the writers gave me one of those in-depth questions. He said, you know, that reminds us a lot of the tie that Tom Seaver had on yesterday. And, you know, not what's it going to like to pitch to Rose and, you know, and Mays and Aaron and McCovey and all those kind of guys. And I said, actually, it was a gift from Tom Seaver because, you know, we let him win the World Series last year. I said, actually, you know what? I bought it in Cleveland. There's not much else to do. Oh, did I take some stuff when we went to Cleveland. They wrote a whole editorial about how baseball players, they sleep in and then they watch soap operas and whatever. I think Russell Stover was one of the editors, and read the editorial column, and I saw him, and I said, you know, actually, I got up real early this morning, and I tried to go see, some, you know, the Museum of Modern Art or, you know, see some cultural things here in Cleveland. They're all, because of lack of funding, they're all closed. I just, you know, went around the corner and came back and went to sleep, but thank you so much for the article. But my first All-Star game was, in Cincinnati. They just opened up Riverfront Stadium. It kind of gives you an idea of how old I am because now they have a new stadium there. But I actually pitched three shutouts. I bunted on Tom Seaver, and when I got back to the dugout, Dave McNally said, you know, you could have taken a beat, man. Why'd you bunt? And I made a good bunt, and Pete Rose threw me out. He was playing third base instead of second base. And I go, that was Tom Seaver, you know, 95 at the knees and a slider to match. So I was just happy to get a bunt down. But, you know, I think it was the first time I realized, because of my first All-Star game, Frank Howard, who was one of the great home run hitters, 6'8", he was standing there. He had his long underwear on and his jock strap and, you know, greeting everybody, you know, talking about beating the National League. And back then, the American League didn't win a lot of the All-Star games. We had, you know, certainly a good league, and we did our good job in the World Series. But it's kind of a memory. And then, you know, McNally, Earl Weaver's managing the ball club, and the Orioles, that's the game where Pete Rose would hit Ray Fosse in the 10th inning at home plate and really change his career. I mean, I thought it was kind of it was an aggressive slide, but he had the whole plate. He didn't really have to hit him, but that's the way Pete played. But I pitched the first three innings, and then they bring in Sam McGowell, and Johnny Bench is hitting him over the roof foul, and he gets in a little bit of trouble, and Earl Weaver walks down the bench, and Dave was, I mean, he was doing what I thought I was going to do, which is basically just go to Cincinnati, your first All-Star game, and watch. You know, and then Earl Weaver said, you know, at the luncheon the day before the All-Star game, he said, I was going to be the next 30-game winner. Well, I never won 20 games. I won 16-4 at 69, and never in my back. So I came back, and I would win 20 games 8 out of the next 9 years, but he had me as the next 30-game winner. So McNally's sitting there, and he's got his uniform on, but he's got his shower shoes on, and Weaver goes, get down there and warm up. I need you to, you know, I might have to relieve Sam McDowell. And McNally looked at early and goes, you want me to warm up to replace Sutton, Sam McDowell? You got to be crazy. He said, get your spikes on. By the time Mac went in and got his spikes on, McDowell was out of trouble. So those were just some of the memories. And, you know, we would lose, I think, 5-4 or 4-3 in the 10th inning. But, you know, All-Star games, they didn't do the home run thing. They were exciting because back then, you know, now it's significance. Obviously, you get home field advantage in the World Series, which is, you know, for a team like, say, the Red Sox, or even the Orioles with, you know, Trumbo, Ortiz as the DHs, you want to have that seven-game advantage of having your DH four games. So, but back then it was just about pride. And, you know, I was happy to start the All-Star game in a sense, but to face Willie Mays, and every time I see Willie, he still thinks I pitched in the National League. I only faced him one time. He swung three high fastballs and went back to the bench. And he goes, You're wild. And I maybe somebody told him I was wild. I never hit any guys. I could walk people, but I never hit anybody. So anyway, that was my first guy I ever faced in an All-Star game, Willie Mays, back in 1970.
Awesome. That's perfect. That's all I needed. Thank you, Jim.
There you go. But first recollections, in 1975, I'm not on the ballot.
Right.
Okay. So people actually had to physically write my name in to get me into the All-Star game.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool in and itself.
Yeah.
Because they had to take time to do it.
Yeah.
You know? In today's world, I don't know if they would write their name or my name or anything else like that. But when I got there, I got to the team, Henry Aaron's on the team.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty big thrill for me because I'd seen him as a kid, and now he's my teammate. So even though I didn't start that game, I remember flying out to deep center against Seaver, and I said, oh, man, I just missed that thing. But I was so excited just to be in the game, to be honest with you, and to see all the players that, you know, representing both sides, and it was a big thrill.
Yeah, man, that's right. There's no interleague play, so, you know, you're facing Tom Seaver. That's the only time you get to face him. That's pretty cool.
You know, through the course of basically my 9 years as an All-Star, that's the way it was. You might see a guy in spring training, maybe, but normally you wouldn't see a star early in spring. You might see some guy from the B squad, but so that's the only time I ever faced these guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's the first time you get to look at them, and very rarely did you see them again.
Yeah.
So it's just a one shot and see what you can do against the best.
I mean, that would be a big thrill for you to keep getting, you know, so, like I said, so many years in a row that you kept going to the All-Star game. That had to, you know, did you take it for granted ever, or were you like, wow, this is pretty?
No, you know, I really was pointing towards that. I mean, I really wanted to make that team.
Yeah.
It meant something to me. You know, I like playing on the big stage. I like playing in front of a lot of people. I like playing against the best.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you measure yourself.
Yeah.
That's one of the ways I measure how I do is how I do against the good guys.
Yeah.
And so you're facing the best of the best.
Yeah.
Maybe they aren't Hall of Famers, but they're having a phenomenal year, or they had a phenomenal year the previous year. So it's an honor to be there. And then you get to meet some of the rest of the guys in the league.
Yeah.
And that's fun, too.
You homered off Steve Carlton, I saw, in an All-Star game. I mean, what kind of...
I sure did.
Tell me about that.
Well, he was just coming off a season where he won, like, 27 games.
Yeah.
And I think the Phillies won, like, 54 or something.
Yeah.
They still won, like, half the games.
Yeah.
And most lefties didn't play against Steve.
Yeah.
And most left-handed hitters. So when I faced him, I knew he had a wicked breaking ball, kind of a big sweeping... He called it a slider. It was more of a curveball.
Yeah.
And then he had good gas.
Yeah.
So I come up there, and I'm having a pretty good year myself.
Yeah.
And I just battled him, man. He kept throwing these nasty pitches. I fall him off, and finally he left a fastball out over the plate, and I hit it out. And I had hit a home run off Seaver in 1976. And so I got Seaver and I got Carlton. Of course, Carlton, nasty lefty. I was that's... And the interesting thing is that I came out of the game, I had a groin pull.
Oh, yeah.
And I was voted in by the fans to start. So I felt obligated to play, and I saw a homer, and then I came out of the game.
Yeah.
I would love to have stayed in that game, believe me, because you homer your first at bat, you got a chance to do some damage, you know, and I had to come out. But that was a big highlight, hitting a homer right off him.
And, you know, obviously the one everyone remembers was in 83. You were playing for the Angels at that time. And, you know, the American League, you had lost, I think it was 10, 11.
45 in a row.
Yeah, it seemed like it. You had played in all these All-Star games.
Yeah.
And so, you know, played 8 All-Star games in a row, and you lost them all. So finally you get there in 83. I'm sure the American League was determined, you know, it's got to be a pride issue at some point.
Oh, there's definitely that. You know, I mean, it was just, the leagues were separate, totally separate back then. You know, we each had our own president. We had our own balls. We had our own umpires. Lee McPhail was the president of the American League. He'd call us up. Yeah. We got to win this game. Come on. You know, and get the guys, try to get fired them up. But what was happening was that the National League was set. Their lineup was set. Every year it was the same guys. Yeah. And they all turned out to be Hall of Famers pretty much. The American League was like in flux.
Yeah.
Lots of new guys coming in and out. Some of the veteran players, but a whole bunch of new guys. Uh-huh. And when you're a new guy in the All-Star game, you get jitters.
Yeah,
I don't know who you are. So that kind of showed when we the way we played. Well, now, in 83, we got a bunch of guys that have been there.
Yeah.
And we just came out, and we got put some numbers on the board early, and then Allie Hammaker was pitching, and they walked Robin Young to get to me, load the bases, which doesn't happen very often, you know, in an All-Star game. And I battled him, got to 2-2, and I hit a curveball out. That was a big moment for the American League. You know, me too, but really for the American League.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first Grand Slam in the history of the All-Star game. And I believe, I can't find another
one.
It's the only Grand Slam. You know, how amazing is it that all the great players who played in an All-Star game, it's the only Grand Slam in the history of the All-Star
game. Okay, you cover baseball, right?
Yeah.
Right, so, in the course of a game, daily game, how many times do the bases get loaded per game?
Yeah. 2 to 3.
Two, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe none.
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah.
But now you're talking about the best pitchers in all of baseball.
Yeah.
Okay? So now you got to get bases loaded against the best pitchers in baseball. Now, whoever comes in is somebody's closer.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to get all those guys on base. You know, it's, I think Crew got a triple, somebody walked, and then they walked another guy to get to me. So that's how we got our guys on base. But it's hard to get that combination to get bases loaded with a whole bunch of stars.
Yeah.
You know, somebody said home run, or in the last 2 or 3 years hasn't even been a bases loaded situation.
Right,
so I haven't had to put the whammy on.
Exactly. It's got to be. It's kind of like, you know, you have a few claims to fame. That's one of your claims to fame, and that's a pretty special one, I would think.
It is, and I was in Colorado when the All-Star game was there, and Big Mac McGuire was playing for the American League, and bases were loaded. And I'm thinking, okay, here's another Trojan. If anybody's going to do it, we could have two Trojans, you know, hit Grand Slam.
Right.
So I was like, you know, I'm okay with this. Go ahead, do it. Yeah. And he popped up. I was
Do you, you still like to watch the All-Star game?
I do. I watch. Yeah. Well, I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, I go.
You go for MLB.
I do. I do some stuff for MLB. And, yeah, I really enjoy it. I hope the players think of it like I did. You want to do the best you can, obviously, against the best. And you want to win.
Yeah.
Not for home field advantage. I hate that rule, by the way.
I mean,
whoever has the best record should have home field advantage.
Yeah.
That should mean something.
Mm-hmm.
162 games, that should mean something.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah,
and if you think that the players are going to say, well, we could get home field advantage, let's win this game.
Nah.
That's, they want to win the game because you want to win the game.
Right.
You want to be the best. You want to be the best of the best. That's why you play.
I mean, I guess when you're at these games, it's got to help. Probably just brings back some memories for you, too.
It does.
Yeah.
It's really fun. I hope the players enjoy it. I know that it's a lot of demands on their time now. It was so relaxed.
Yeah.
I mean, that first year I played, Monday workout, that was not even mandatory. Optional workout on Monday. Commissioner's luncheon on Tuesday. Guys like, yes, we ain't going. So you play the game, you come out of the game, hop on a plane, you go somewhere. It was really low key. In fact, when I won the MVP, I won a wooden trophy. You know, you get a car.
Man, you were playing at the wrong time. Which kind of all-stars? Who are the guys? Some of the guys you enjoy watching play the game the most these days?
Well, these days, I'm partial to outfield play.
Yeah.
So you know, and I don't see the National League that much. So it's time for me to see the National League center fielders or outfielders like McCutcheon from Pittsburgh, and I like watching the kid from this Washington, the Nationals.
Harper,
So I enjoy watching the guys and see what they can do. And I enjoy Home Run Derby, too. I know it's physically demanding, and it's demanding on the time of the players, but it's fun to watch.